Reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras. Text 53. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Prakashyate Kvapi Patre. Nonetheless, from time to time, pure love of God is revealed to those who are qualified. Purport. A Mahabhagavat devotee of the Lord Himself is pleased to find a fit candidate for understanding the inexpressible meanings of Bhakti Yoga. The transference of knowledge in Krishna consciousness is, in one sense, very straightforward. Srila Prabhupada used to criticize the story of a disciple who said that he received knowledge from his guru by a method similar to receiving an electric shock. Lord Krishna taught Arjuna by the process of question and answer, and one may still faithfully study Krishna's lucid words for enlightenment in bhakti yoga. As always, therefore, the process of receiving the teachings of bhakti yoga is to serve the spiritual master, inquire from him, and hear his prompt instruction. And yet, learning the science of bhakti yoga is not an ordinary transference of knowledge, as when a professor writes lessons on a blackboard and his students write them down. Only if the spiritual teacher is actually potent and the students are purely receptive can the teacher plant the seed of bhakti, the bhakti lata bija, in their hearts. How that seed fructifies in a student's heart is not understandable by material calculations. Srila Prabhupada writes, human reason fails to understand how by serving the devotee Bhagavat or the book Bhagavat, one gets gradual promotion on the path of devotion. But actually, these are facts explained by Srila Narada Dev, who happened to be a maidservant's son in his previous life, Bhagavatam 1.2.18. Although the guru-disciple relationship is a subtle one, it can be understood by the standard qualifications of both persons. For example, although Narada was a young boy, the Bhaktivedanta sages who visited his home found him a fit candidate, and so they blessed him. Narada recalls the incident. Although they were impartial by nature, those followers of the Vedanta blessed me with their causeless mercy. As far as I was concerned, I was self-controlled and had no attachment to sports, even though I was a young boy. In addition, I was not naughty, and I did not speak more than required. Bhagavatam 1.5.24. It's a long purport. We'll start commenting here. Maybe read on. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurudeva Namaha Anshakalpa Purubhyascha Vitashindu Bhaye Vija Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vishnadebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from the Sun Falls, Stuyvesant Falls. Just nice to stop the wheels for a little while and catch up on things. Now, we're in a section. We had a description previously of how to attain bhakti, and we discussed the role of mercy and association, humility, And now the various grades of bhakti are going to be described. And it's being described as beyond description. Because there's no mundane comparison for the spiritual realm. So how to really describe it to someone who doesn't have the experience of it? Language is based on words that express a common experience. If there's no common experience, then how far can language go in expressing something? I think the example was given. Just excuse me one second. I think the example was given like explaining sex life to a child, or explaining what a sweet is like to a person who's never tasted one and only had the taste of bitter, sour, salty, pungent, and hot. So, language at its best can... Just one second. This is something I have to do something. Language at best can point to something, but still you have to experience it to actually understand it. Sometimes they say, like, you want to see the moon, they say it's through the branches of the tree, almost like a frame of reference. And when you're describing God, the definition of God is infinite. I was once sitting at lunch with this very advanced Vaishnava who previously was a physicist and a mathematician. And we were sitting with, it was in Mayapur, we were sitting with some people who were not at all devotees. They had a company from Hawaii, and they were pursuing maybe a contract in Mayapur about some kind of eco waste system. So he was explaining at the time that, you know, the absolute reality is infinite by definition, and mathematics deals with finite concepts. So by definition, you can't make a formula to describe the absolute reality. So we discussed that in previous purports. If you have the Narada Bhakti Sutras, you could read them. And an example, like a mute tastes something, but he doesn't have the mechanism to explain it. So we don't have a mechanism of language to experience, to explain the transcendental realm. But now, today's verse was nonetheless, from time to time, a pure lover of God. Love of God. This is revealed to those who are qualified. What does it say there? From time to time, pure love of God is revealed to those who are qualified. And just a practical experience of that, I know in studying the Bhagavatam, it's kind of like the absolute truth. Our position in relationship is to serve. And if we're not in that position, then how can we understand the absolute truth? It's kind of like the gross can't perceive the subtle, you know. You know, the eyelids can't perceive the eye can't perceive the mind can't perceive the soul. It's just a gross instrument, you know, when something is subtle, the instrument has to be proper. And in this example, the instrument, the receptivity of the instrument has to be proper. And therefore, the example is given there as electric shock. It's not an electric shock, but it's not even, Prabhupada said, it's not exactly an intellectual understanding. It's a revelation in heart that comes from a transcendental platform by mercy. Therefore, sometimes it's hard to explain God to someone who has no faith in it, because faith is the vehicle by which we understand. And what is faith is? Faith is a trust. And this is my own definition. If we have some philosophers out there that want to, faith is a trust. Faith is a trust that allows us to open our hearts to something and experience it. It's kind of a mechanism of the mind, basically, of a consciousness, some kind of mechanism that allows experience of something that's beyond our understanding. You can't understand anything beyond your perception without faith. Without faith, and therefore there's there's no mundane comparison. Something has to be, a realization has to be transferred. It's something a little mystical. And I experienced that too, reading the Bhagavatam. It's beyond the words. The intellect is applied in Krishna's service, but there's some experience. It's not intellectual, it's an experience. In one sense, it may even be an intellectual experience, but it's an experience. Tadami Buddhi Yogam Twam, Hesham Satati Yogdanam, Bhachitam Kriti Purvakam, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Twam. Those who worship me faithful, I give them the knowledge. So it's the same point. There has to be the proper receptacle. It's just like Krishna's rasa dance. There has to be some experience spiritually to give you a frame of reference that that's an expression of devotion and service and not mundane sex life. Because our only comparison to something like Krishna and the gopis in the world is, our only comparison, at least externally, is boy and girl. But it's something deeper than that. It's based on something deeper, which is the expression of pure love and devotion. And therefore, that knowledge is revealed sometimes to people who either have some frame of reference, some experience of that realm, or a trust and faith that will allow them to consider it in a different way than what their experience is of it. So if not by words, how do you understand it? It's revealed to a worthy soul. And the sage of Namasharanya praised the speaker Sutta Goswami in a similar way. And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us what you have scientifically learned from them. Bhagavatam 118. For realization of the most advanced knowledge, such as the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, the devotee has to be extremely well qualified. As Krishnadas Kaviraj says, unto one who is able to understand, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed mercy by giving him the association of his servant and his servants. Adulila 283. The spiritual knowledge Lord Chaitanya conveyed to Ramana Roy was so completely out of the range of mundane vision that Lord Chaitanya said that only a madman can understand it. Lord Chaitanya confided in Ramananda. Please rest assured that I have nothing to hide from you. Even if I do try to hide something from you, you are such an advanced devotee, you can understand all my secrets. The facts which I have disclosed to you cannot be understood by materialistic people. When they hear this, they will simply laugh at me. You can understand this yourself and keep it to yourself. When he was discussing with Ramananda Roy, they were very, very in-depth understanding. Even their relationship was on a very, very high dimension. And therefore, they were relating in such an intimate way, even though Ramananda Roy was a king, who a sannyasi would not associate with in that culture, because the king, to inspire servitude and reverence in the populace, had to express or had to have accoutrements of opulence, even if the king was detached. And Lord Chaitanya was a very strict sannyasi. But he was embracing Ramananda Roy. Practically, they were rolling on the floor. But then they looked around and they saw the Brahmins, who were not bhaktis and were not rag bhaktis, and therefore didn't have understanding of what they're doing. And then they stop, but we'll meet in a secret place. Later years, when Lord Chaitanya exhibited his pastimes of entering intensely into the mood of Radharani and separation from Krishna, he shared this rasa only with his most intimate devotees, such as Ramananda Roy and Sri Damodar. and can understand the Lord's moods, which sometimes produce displays of seeming madness, which ordinary words or behavior could not express. Quote, only a person on the level of Srup Damodar Goswami can fully know what Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tastes in his love for Krishna. Narada points in this sutra is that even when bhakti cannot be expressed in words, its essence can be manifest by the ecstatic symptoms of one great soul and appreciated by another great soul. Lord Chaitanya felt an ecstatic mood coming on, but there were non-devotees present. He would try to restrain his outward expressions of ecstatic love. For example, when Lord Chaitanya first met Ramananda Roy, they embraced and almost lost consciousness, overwhelmed by the ecstatic love of Krishna and the gopis. But some stereotype, ritualistic Brahmins were present at the time, and they doubted the propriety of the interaction between Lord and Ramananda. According to Krishna's Kaviraj, quote, while the Brahmins were thinking in this way about the activities of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, Lord Chaitanya saw the Brahmins and restrained his transcendental emotion. CC Mudd 828. We should not think that only a fixed number of intimate devotees can receive bhakti shakti and that we are obviously not among the chosen. The Acharyas advise that if we keep on striving, one day each one of us may uncover our original dormant Krishna consciousness. Moreover, Lord Chaitanya surpassed all previous Acharyas, Bhaktas, and incarnations by very liberally distributing intimate love of God. Anyone who is receptive to the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya could therefore be quickly elevated by the platform where he can understand the inexpressible experiences of Bhakti Yoga. Appreciation for the liberality of Lord Chaitanya Rupa Goswami composed a prayer. Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pidayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Shishe Namaha. Offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is more magnanimous than any other avatar, even Krishna himself, because he's bestowing freely what no one else has ever given, pure love of Krishna. So, yeah, rare souls understand. Even intellectually, it's beyond intellect. It's beyond logic. It's dealing with God. It doesn't go beyond a frame of reasonability. But to actually pinpoint what that experience is, it's rare that a person has that perspective. You know, it's kind of like someone said, it's kind of like, you know, a contact lens is lost in the parking lot. You know, what are the chances of finding it? But if someone knows where it is found, what the area is, then they can apply their, you know, efforts and perhaps find it. So it's like that. There's infinite choices of what a spiritual experience can be, even within our own frame of reference. So unless there's some kind of special mercy to direct one's intelligence, be very, very highlighted. And even then, unless one is in the proper consciousness, in the mood of service, he won't have a frame of reference. And there has to be a transference of some inspiration or revelation. Even the greatest musical and scientific discoveries don't come just by some kind of hard work. They come by a revelation. Because often those discoveries are from a pool of infinite amount of possibilities. So how one is directed is an inspiration. We're going to do one more verse. 54. Guna rahitam, kamana rahitam. Tikshina bardamanam, abichinam, shukshmat param, anubhava rupam. Pure love of God manifests as the most subtle consciousness, devoid of material qualities. And material desires increasing at every moment and never interrupting. So, again, this is not what it's not allowing you to experience that, but it's giving you a hint where you may look, or where you may not look. Because it says it's revealed. So when it's revealed, what is it like? So it says, guna rahitam. It's devoid of gunas. It's not governed by any selfish desire as the material world is governed by gunas. The modes of nature are what? The world is composed of the modes of nature. There's strands of matter that give us different facilities to conduct various activities, to conduct sleep or inertia, to conduct intense activity, Rajagun, Sattvagun, to conduct enlightened thought. But the influence of those modes is based on some type of attachment to being self-centered, being the enjoyer. In other words, it's connected with a false conception of the self. So when you say gunas, which pervade everything, you're talking about the matter facilitating the desire not to be a devotee. But here it says, this pure love of Godhead, gunaritam, it's not governed by any of the modes. So even Krishna's pastimes with the cowherd boys, which is an expression of this prema, is not governed by any tinge of selfish desire, but their reflections, and that's also discussed in the Jiva Dharma, how the material world is a reflection. It's a perversion of the internal potency. Sat, Ananda. Sat, Chit, Ananda. When Chit, or knowledge, comes to the material world, it's material knowledge. When sat, you know, it's material. When sat comes to the material world, it's material existence. When anan comes to the material, it's material pleasure. So there's some kind of correlation. It's a transformation of something. But that originally comes from Krishna. But it has a completely different quality. It's material. If there's any opulence within this material world, it's from Krishna book, the cause of the opulence is Krishna. Without selfish desire. to this type of love. It has no sense of being for oneself. It's the greatest self-sacrifice. One is giving oneself completely. And by giving oneself completely, one is gaining oneself completely, because what we are is love of God. And it, the bhakti also here is described as pratikshana, vardhanam, it's increasing at every moment, and avichanam, it's uninterrupted. So this is the ladini shakti. When material pleasure, it reaches a culmination, and then it wanes. It doesn't keep on increasing. It reaches a culmination, and it wanes, and then that pleasure is ends. The pleasure ends at its culmination. It's described in this prema. It's increased unlimitedly. It describes very beautiful that concept of reality, of the exchange of love represented in the original exchange of Krishna and Krishna's energy, which is exemplified by the form of Krishna and the form of Radha. And it described that Krishna's happiness is a response to the beauty of Srimati Radharani, and Radharani's happiness is a response to the beauty of Krishna. So as Krishna sees the beauty of Radha, and Radha and Krishna's beauty is a manifestation of their happiness. So when Radha sees Krishna, she becomes more happy, and she becomes more beautiful, which makes Krishna more happy and more beautiful, makes Radha more happy and beautiful. So they have this conception that in an ultimate realm, the happiness, the pleasure, the spirit of love, which is called bhakti, which is a function of the Lord's own ladini shakti, his pleasure potency. And if it's a potency of God, why should it be limited? Why should it end? And the object of your love, it's art, it's real. And the very flavor of love is called Chakuka, Apurvita, unprecedented wonder. It's a relationship. If there's God and God has the power to make perfect relationships, then the relationship will expand. There will be an increasing ocean of bliss. Because every time you have to feel in dealing with transcendental phenomena, never before. Because the nature of transcendental phenomena is unlimited, and therefore it's always expanding. And then it says, Shukshma, Padam. Anubhav. It's such a subtle consciousness. The very, very subtle, not on the, as Bhagavad Gita says, 342, the working sense is the superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses, intelligence is higher than mind. And the soul is higher than the intelligence. The soul is so subtle. So that kind of love based on the platform of the soul, very, very deep. In that regard of the soul, a Jehovah Witness came to my door today. So I let him in, and he sat down, and very, very nice man. I expressed my appreciation to him. I said, you know, I encouraged him in his work. he was nice. It was very interesting. It must have been an unusual experience to him, you know, to speak to someone who is conversant with love of Godhead and has a commonality in the core concepts of love of Godhead. Very, very interesting. He felt encouraged. He gave me a watchtower, and I gave him a Beyond Birth and Death. I hope he doesn't burn it, but maybe he'll read it. But he was a nice man, you know. And you know, I asked him about his practices, and he asked me who Jesus was, and I said, well, he's the Son of God, but he's not the only Son. He said, that's exactly what the Jehovah Witnesses believe. And it's true. I mean, they have a speciality to Jesus, which we may not have in such an exclusive thing, like the only begotten Son, you know, something in this world or something. You may have some differences, but generally, and my conception of God, he was, you know, what can he say? You know, we believe in God. He asked me about the name of God, because that's a big thing in the Jehovah Witnesses. And I said, you know, God is, in different languages, they have different names for different objects, but it refers to the same object. So I said, there's one God. And anyway, just a very nice man. I said, I encourage you, you know, it's good that he's doing the mission. He's going out door to door to try to tell people about God in some form or other. And, you know, they're very dedicated. They go out every weekend for a couple of hours, you know, Saturday and Sunday, really dedicated. So, but I read something before he came about the Jehovah Witnesses that they don't believe the soul is eternal. And I spoke to him about that. And their conception of the soul, it's so strange. Their conception of the soul is the mind and the body. So I said, basically, you have the same conception of us, that the mind and body is not eternal. I said, but what goes to heaven? And he described the spirit of God, the breath of God. You know, it's very simplistic. But I said, yes, that's called the soul. But it's shukshma param. It's very, very subtle. So subtle that I think they missed it to one degree. So, are there any questions? Would anybody like to say hello?
Krishna Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances.
Nanda Dulal. You know, Vetrikishore, you know, he listens. Go ahead.
Oh, really?
What's your question?
Maharaj, about the chanting you mentioned, introspection. Can you? I know that it is not related to this.
Oh, you got my journal.
Yeah.
Introspection means to think deeply. There's an experience that happens when we chant. We're vibrating the name, trying to think deeply. What are we feeling? What are we experiencing? That's what I call introspective chanting. Otherwise, the mind will be all over the place. So that's one of the ways I try to fix my mind. I try to hear the sound of vibration. I try to feel it. That's Krishna. So I'm trying to experience Krishna through the name. And then I'm trying to experience how I feel about Krishna. You're talking about the journal I sent out, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj.
I was going to say, I'm Raj Kishore listens to all my tapes. You know, so he said, is Nanda Dulal Dr. Bhattacharya? He said he has such a sweet voice.
Yeah, Obhijit was looking for him, you know, when he was in West Coast, but he never met.
He was looking for when he was where?
Yeah, when he was in West Coast. Abhijit was in Los Angeles. No, he was in San Diego also, but he never met him.
Raj Kishore is in Japan.
Oh, he's in Japan now.
He lives in Japan for many years.
Oh, also.
He lives in Japan many years. Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Brajaraj Devdas.
Hare Krishna. That was such a wonderful program at your house. So many
nice people.
We'll have to do it again.
Yes, Maharaj, thank you.
It was really a wonderful program. I enjoyed it so much. You know, it was set up nicely and everybody could hear.
Yes,
anybody else?
Maharaj.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail? Lord Krishna? Any questions?
Oh, no. I just wanted to say hello and say that I really enjoyed the class today. There's another one that I'm going to have to, as so many others lately, another one I'm going to have to listen to very attentively again.
Very, very good. Thank you, Gail.
Yeah.
Very, very good, Gail. It's so important to hear regularly. If people don't hear regularly, it's hard to renew their faith. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can end for today. Thank you all. One should call for two gifts, Jack, if a single baby, chocolate, you can unfold it.